Reading this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 7. I'm going to be reading both 20 and 21. And 21 is on the board. Translation. The Lord in His incarnation of Dhanvantri very quickly cures the diseases of the ever-diseased living entities simply by His fame personified. There's four things identified what Dhanvantri is particularly known for. That's one. And only because of Him do the demigods achieve long lives. Thus the personality of Godhead becomes ever glorified. He also extracted a share from the sacrifices. And it is He only who inaugurated the medical science or the knowledge of medicine in the universe. Srila Prabhupada, as stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, everything emanates from the ultimate source of the personality of Godhead. It is therefore understood in this verse that medical science or knowledge in medicine was also inaugurated by the personality of Godhead in His incarnation Dhanvantari, and thus the knowledge is recorded in the Vedas. The Vedas are the source of all knowledge, and thus knowledge in medical science is also there for the perfect cure of diseases of the living entity. The embodied living entity is diseased by the very construction of his body. The body is the symbol of diseases. The disease may differ from one variety to another, but disease must be there, just as there is birth and death for everyone. So, by the grace of the personality of Godhead, not only are diseases of the body and mind cured, but also the soul is relieved of the constant repetition of birth and death. The name of the Lord is also Bhavoshadhi, or the source of curing the disease of material existence. That was a very nice melody, the chanting of the verse. Even the sound of the verse is very nice. Dhanvantari cha bhagavan sayam eva kirtir nam nam nunam puru rajam buja ashuhanti yagye cha bhagam amutayur ava varuntha ayusha vedam anushanti avatir yaloke. The Lord in His incarnation of Dhanvantri very quickly cures the diseases of the ever-diseased living entities simply by His fame personified. Kirti. In a general reference to Dhanvantri, Prabhupada would refer to Him as a partial incarnation. And then there are sections where it gets very technical. These prabhava, that is, forms fully potent, like the personality of Godhead, as opposed to vaibhava, or forms partially potent. To describe this a little bit. Because it's presented by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings to Sanatan Goswami. Similarly, it's presented in teachings of Lord Chaitanya, because that's part of, it's a summary of the five instructing sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita, one of which is Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. I'll describe something that's a little technical. There's no harm in hearing it. And it's not like you can't go back to Godhead if you don't understand it. Don't worry. But at least one thing that should be very clear, there's a science to spiritual technology and the categorization of things, as in the material world, there are material sciences to understand the details of a particular thing. So our great acharyas who are on the highest stages of realization of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, they also are fully conversant in these subject matters, so we'll present them with that understanding. It's something like this. There's a standard for our ISKCON understanding. There are six categories of avatars. What are those six categories of avatars? Lila avatar, Guna avatar, Manvantar avatar, Shaktyavesha avatar, Guna avatar. What's the other one? There's six. Purusha avatar, yes. Yeah. There's six. And there are ways of, aside from those six, there are ways of categorizing those six as a group. Some are, I'll read it because it's technical, some are Prabhava, some are Vibhava, and then there's Sad Aishvarya Purna avatars. That's Krishna. The Lord I'm reading now from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 2, Text 97, Prabhupada's purport. The Lord primarily expands Himself in two categories, namely Prabhava and Vaibhava. The Prabhava forms are fully potent, like Sri Krishna. Fully potent, so that's Dhanvantri is in that category. He's manifesting the Lord's potency of Kirti, His fame. The verse is saying that just by His influence of fame, He cures people. That's pretty good. Know any doctors like that? Dhanvantri is such a doctor. And the Vaibhava forms are partially potent. The potent Prabhava manifestations are of two varieties, temporary and eternal. Temporary in the sense that they appear within a particular age only. Examples, the temporary Prabhava are Mohini. Mohini Murti, Hamsa Avatar. You know Mohini Murti, Hamsa Avatar. There's a whole chapter about Hamsa Avatar, where very interesting. The Kumaras ask Brahma, how is it, it's a very technical question, how is it that sense objects, which are quite distinct from the living entity, and are outside the living entity, also find their way and become impressions within the mind of the living entity. What is this relationship between the mind and the objects of the senses for a soul who is aspiring to become liberated? And Brahma becomes bewildered. He can't give a suitable answer to the Kumara's question. And that's remarkable, because in the Chaturshloki verses before and after, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said to Brahma, you follow this process and you won't become bewildered. Acharya's commented, just see how risky it is to have some opulence in this world, how easily one can become proud, and by that pride one can become bewildered. Watch out for pride. Watch out. A little something and one gets right away proud. So, trinadapi samichena. So, Brahma, wanting to perform his duty nicely of answering his son's questions, he meditates deeply upon the form of the Lord. Actually, this is in the 11th canto. Krishna speaking to Uddhava, and then he said, I suddenly manifested myself as a swan, and then I spoke transcendental knowledge to the four Kumaras. And when they saw me, they were stunned. And they said, who are you? And I said, what kind of a question is this? Who are you? Don't you know that there are distinctions between individual souls and you're thinking I'm one of you? Then he goes on and just, he basically says, this is a nonsense question. Who are you? On the philosophical basis, he really spins them around. So anyway, Hamsa Avatar is in the temporary category of Prabhava. And Shukla is another. Then there are others that are not temporary, but they're in the Prabhava category, and Dhanvantri is one. Lord Rishabhdev, the Prabhava avatar, Vyas, Dattatreya, and Kapila. Then there are Vaibhava, Prakash forms that are well known, Kurma, Matsya, Naranarayan, Varaha, Hayagriva, Krishnigarbha, Baladev, who killed Palamba, Yajna, and so on, Vamana, and so on. So that's he's a partial incarnation. Prabhupada generally refers to him in that way. At the same time, he's manifesting the fullness of the Lord's fame potency. And how does, it's not mentioned, the Leela is not mentioned in the verse, but how does Dhanvantri manifest himself? You know how Krishna manifests himself and how Ram manifests himself. So each of the forms of the Lord, they have their Leela of how they manifest themselves. Dhanvantri was manifested from the churning of the milk ocean. Both the sons of Diti and Aditi, the Daityas and the demigods, they were churning, and from the churning, slowly there emerged, following Varuni, which she appeared in a female form at once, the asuras captured her, the goddess of intoxication. Then Dhanvantri appeared. And I'd like to read the description of what his form looks like. He was very strong, strongly built, very young in feature. His arms are very long, stout, and strong. His neck had the three lines resembling a conch shell. His eyes were very reddish, and his complexion was blackish. He was very young, wearing a garland of flowers, and his whole body was decorated with various ornaments, dressed in yellow garments, and wore brightly polished earrings made of pearls. Quite a dapper personality here. The tips of his hairs were anointed with oil, and his chest was very broad. His body had all good features, and he was stout and strong like a lion, decorated with bangles, and in his hand he carried a jug filled right to the top with nectar. The demons couldn't resist. They grabbed the pot of nectar. And the commentary explains that although he's the Supreme Lord and he has the strength of the Supreme Lord, how eager the demons were to get that pot of nectar, they were able to snatch it from his hand. So, the demigods, the four things that are mentioned, is that by his fame, he was able to cure the ever-diseased living entities of all diseases by his influence of his fame. The longevity of the demigods was made possible by Dhanvantri. Mentioned in many places in relation to Dhanvantri, although he's the personality of Godhead, he would receive the share of sacrifices when rituals were made, where offerings were made unto the devas. He would receive a share of the sacrifice. And of course, most commonly known is this one, that he established the Ayurveda. So Prabhupada explains that the Vedas are knowledge of everything. It's knowledge. So knowledge means knowledge of everything. And Dhanvantri manifested that knowledge by which living entities could be cured of all diseases. And what's the best way of curing all diseases? You don't have a material body to get diseased. That's the best way. No more disease. No more material body. So the disease of material existence is the essence of the message of Dhanvantri. Just, I'll share something that's very much related to this. It's kind of anecdotal, but I've taken Ayurvedic treatment from a particular Ayurvedic doctor for some period of time. And when, a few years ago, he was constructing an Ayurvedic clinic. It wasn't finished yet, but he was like showing off a little bit. He wanted me to, you know, from the top floor all the way to the bottom floor, and top floor of the residential quarters, and the next floor is where they would do all the panchakarma treatment, the next, some side for the women, some side for the men, and, you know, steam this and jacuzzi that, and then the next floor down was where they would take pulse reading and, you know, basic procedures with patients. And then their medicine area, and they had their Ayurvedic foods prepared according to your dosha. And then the basement was an instruction hall. By the time we got to the basement, he turned to me and said, "You know, the science of Ayurveda is so comprehensive that practically speaking, any disease that someone has, you can bring a cure. You know, that gift has been given by the Lord to us. But something that we found over a period of time, all that we can do through Ayurveda is we can bring the doshas of the body back into balance. But then if the lifestyle of the person doesn't change, it's going to go again in balance. The problem is not just what the doshas are. No, allopathic medicine just deals with the symptom. You just cover the symptom with some drug. The root of the symptom, we say, is the balance of the doshas. And you balance the doshas, then you have good health. But people aren't going to have balanced doshas if their personal habits are imbalanced or impure or improper. And then it goes, and then you have to go further. That has to do with the orientation of the soul to the Supreme. They said, that we cannot do. We don't have that. You have that. So, we need your help. Can you come and train our staff members in devotional service to Krishna? And, of course, I said, and we need your help because even with nice devotional practices, imbalances of the doshas come. But then he responded by saying it's very easy to work with devotees with Ayurveda because their lifestyle is sattvic. If there's some imbalance, it very quickly can become balanced by proper Ayurvedic treatment. The people that don't have the sattvic style that you lifestyle that you have, it's frustrating as a physician. I'm fixing, and I know that it's just like an elastic bungee cord. You stretch it, and it's going to go back. And how to change people's lifestyle? One other anecdotal piece of information. This is on, the punchline is, people are not prepared to change their lifestyles because of their inimical attitude toward the Supreme. Their consciousness goes to sense gratification. So, I made a presentation at one university in America, Penn State University, where the subject was where are we going? It was called the paradox of progress. Looks like we're progressing, but let's take a look at what that progress really is. And statistic after statistic after statistic of such shocking things of how the human being on Earth is completely destroying Earth. There's so many statistic after statistic after statistic. One picture I showed them was a mountain of 10,000 tires. They don't know what to do with. They just take any topic and drill down on it a little bit. I was sharing this with Devamrita Swami. One of the biggest things all over the world in education today is environmental concerns, energy concerns, green. You know, the word green is a buzzword now. Both from the government side, the corporate side, and the eagerness of sincere student side. Many of the students are very sincere to make money, and so there's lots of investment going into the research about solutions to problems of environment. Billions of dollars from all sources, and students are very eagerly gobbling up those billions of research dollars to make a safer environment. But please understand, I mean, devotees understand this. The please is to tell the public, please understand that this is serious stuff. Very serious stuff. The former vice president under Bill Clinton was Al Gore. He just spent a whole year traveling around the world talking about one thing, global warming. I just saw in an article that in the year 2030, if the consumption of fossil fuel in India and China doesn't change between now and then, temperatures are going to be unbearable to live in this place. I mean, at least there's that kind of talk. And people are, wow, what to do? And on the other side, there's this appetite for consumption. More fuel, more energy. What to do? There's a New York Times article that Tata has come out with an automobile that will cost $2,500 and it can fit a family of four. It's like about the same price as a motor scooter. You know what it's like going from point A to point B in Hyderabad today? Wait till this little family car comes out. And everything's running on fossil fuel, and everything that's in fossil fuel is depleting, at least they're saying, is depleting the ozone layer and global warming. What to do? But we have to keep consuming because there's this appetite. So I gave this presentation at Penn State. The statistics are overwhelming. I mean, it's like just so many, many, many things. Here's another. I just found this out from a visit in America. Because of the global warming, in Canada, on the west coast of Canada, all the way from Alaska down to the U.S. border in Vancouver. There used to be a forest there because there's big mountains all the way up that nobody lives in, just zillions of trees. The trees are no longer because there's a certain insect, forget the name of the insect, that normally the eggs would be killed over the winter, but because of global warming, the eggs didn't get killed over the winter. And they were hungry in the winter, and so they devoured the trees. So instead of having green forest, it's now dead trees for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles. You fly in an airplane, you don't see green, you see brown. This Mother Jamuna told me this. The original Mother Jamuna. And then I read it in some report. And the loggers are very happy. Wow, lots of wood. But the whole ecology is completely upside down. It's not just the trees. Everything that was dependent upon those trees, the birds, the insects, you know, the balance of flora and fauna is completely in topsy-turvy. That's just one thing. So many things. So I made this presentation, and you know, one of the students at the end said, I don't know if you knew this, but there's a professor that speaks about this not just from one night like you've done, but a whole semester. And he's, you know, his thing is to help us understand This is really real stuff, that if this doesn't change, it's disaster. And you know what? I look around the room, the classroom, and say, nobody's going to change. Even they have all this information. Because, you know, they want their... He didn't use the word sense gratification. He said, you know, they want their enjoyment. They want their share of the enjoyment. I'm concerned, but I'm not going to change my lifestyle. I want to get a good job, and I want to get good money, and I want to enjoy. One of the statistics says that to recycle by nature's, this is like an international group that studies what's going on Earth. It takes a year and 4 months to recycle what people use. They're estimating that at the present rate of expansion of human consumption, it will take 2 Earths to satisfy the needs of the human population on Earth by the year 2030. What to do? Consume, consume. People can't stop. I'll give you another one. There's a Professor Rajiv Dubey that's a good friend and a devotee. And he used to be, he quit because he couldn't take it anymore. He was a interdepartmental supervisor of the robotics division of the University of Tennessee. Multiple disciplines of engineering dealing with robotics, and the particular application of robotics was the disposal of nuclear waste. Because you can't have a human go and deal with nuclear waste because it's radioactive. So they had robots go into wherever the nuclear waste was, scoop it up, put it inside a capsule, seal the capsule, take the capsule, put it the capsule in a truck. And then the truck would drive away, put it in a hole in the ground, and seal up the hole in the ground. So he was describing to me that they would have quarterly meetings of federal government representatives letting them know the capsules are leaking. It's going into the water table. Radioactive, lethal radioactive stuff is going into the water table. He said it's a no-brainer. You stop producing. Until you find the solution to the problem, you stop producing the radioactive waste. They can't do it. They couldn't make that decision. Because there's too much invested in people getting money and the need of the population to get the energy. So it's like, he said, it's like handing your child a stick of dynamite with a fuse blowing. Because you can't stop trying to enjoy what that energy supplies. Etc., etc., etc. And so it's connected to the... And the student said this at Penn State. He said this in front of everybody, and the students were all nodding. And it was a packed house. It was as many, many people attending the program as are here at class this morning. They're very interested in this subject. They know the problem. They're not prepared to make a change in their lifestyle. It's a collision course. Certain collision course. And they're not even making an attempt to change the direction. They're talking about it. But they can't control their senses. Now how does that happen for people to be able to control their senses? It has to happen on a deeper level. What's our message from Bhagavad Gita? A message from Bhagavad Gita is if we try to restrain the senses from sense enjoyment, but the mind is still dwelling on the sense enjoyment, it's just pretense. But if we can experience a higher taste within, then you can control the senses. Vishaya vinivartante niraharsha dehinam rasavarjam rasopyasya pram drishva nivartate. That's our... Where do you get the higher taste? People don't want the higher taste. They want the lower taste. Then they have this idea of spiritual. I don't know if it's the buzz has hit over here in India, but spiritual. There's a, you know, so-and-so is spiritual. They're not religious, but they're spiritual. Is that hit over here yet? Religious means I don't have belief in this dogma or this particular ritual, but I'm spiritual. So I'm like, you know, I'm more like, I'm okay, you're okay. I'm spiritual. No discipline, no control of the senses, no control of the mind, no following of any authority, but spiritual. Very popular in the West. And spiritual people are starting to like bhajan. That's another news flash from the West. Bibi Govinda Maharaj shared with me that he was recently in America. I had no plan to speak about these things. I was speaking about Dhanvantri, but here we go. He was recently in America because he had meetings that Anutama had arranged to speak with very, very high government officers in the U.S. and the U.N. He spent like 10 days, morning till night, having big, big, big influential people hearing about the whole plight of the Hare Krishna movement in Kazakhstan. Maharaj was explaining, Kazakhstan has become a very important country because it's right on the border of China, India, and Russia. And it has resources, natural resources. And so, you know, who's buddies with Kazakhstan is important. And they're being placed as becoming president, or the chairing group of a whole European bloc of something or other. I don't even know what it is. But because of what they've done, they bulldozed over 29 homes. You know, imagine, the bulldozer, just here comes somebody's home, knock it over. The government did it. Well, the state government did it, while the federal government looked the other way. They knew what was going on. Hey guys, don't do it. 29 homes. The people spent their money and built and lived in with families and their children and just knocked them over. So he was meeting with all those dignitaries. Then he had one day left over, and Anutama invited him to go to some kind of a function, a high class government function with orchestra people and da 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 people, and there's some entertainment. And one of the persons who was the entertainers was Krishna Das, who's an impersonalist bhajan singer. At a federal government function. Wow. In the USA. It's at that level of acceptance and interest and, you know, cool. It's in. At that level. But these people don't have the first understanding, and there's others that are in his genre, they don't have the first understanding about who is Krishna. Anyway, my dear devotees, we have a very serious job in front of us. The world is rapidly changing, and people are moving swiftly off a cliff, and they're ready to splatter on the rocks below. And we have understanding that can help them. Like Dhanvantri has the understanding of how to cure all diseases. And that has to come from a spiritual cure. has to come from the spiritual truth. And then that other science of the lifestyle that goes with living purely. And then the next layer is the things that you do when you have a little problem with your doshas. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared to provide this knowledge. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, the name of the Lord is also called Bhavoshadi, which means that He is the source of curing disease of material existence. Bhavoshadi. You know this verse from the Bhagavatam? Where Bhavoshadi is mentioned. Prabhupada quoted it many, many times. It's the first chapter of the 10th canto where Maharaj Parikshit has heard about the dynasty of the sun and the dynasty of the moon and the Yadu dynasties particularly, and the everything leading up to the advent of Lord Krishna. Then he says, please tell me about Lord Krishna. Because hearing the messages about Lord Krishna, this is Bhavoshadi. Nirvatatayashaya upagiyamadat. Bhavoshadach shrota mano biramat. Kautama shloka gunanavadat puman virajeta vina pashugnat. Nirvatatayashaya is nirviti, elimination. Nirvitra, tireshire. Tireshire is the same as the word Krishna, or comes from the word Krishna. Krishna means thirst for material enjoyment. This lust, or this thing that's driving people to consume, faster, more, varieties, try it this way, try it that way, material enjoyment. Pushing, the compelling, driving charge of material existence is eliminated. Nirvatatayashaya upagiyamadat bhavoshadach. It's the medicine, the cure. Chotra. Shrotra is by hearing. Mano biramad, and the mind becomes fully satisfied, fully pleased. What is that? Ka uttama shloka gunanuvadat. From describing the wonderful pastimes of uttama shloka, who will not become interested in such subject matter and it will remain aloof, except one who is a killer of the soul or a butcher. This is right in the beginning of the 10th canto, Maharaj Parikshit speaking. So the Lord is Bhavoshadach. He himself is the cure of all diseases. The cure of all diseases is the cure of material existence. That's at the foundation of wellness. One doesn't have that clear focus, they're not going to have the lifestyle, and they'll be doing things that are just harmful to themselves, to earth, to each other, and trying to find solutions. Billions of research dollars to find the solutions. Guess what? They're not going to find the solution. They'll find another way of trying to placate the insatiable, lusty desires of living entities in some other fashion. They'll exploit some other resource. Just like Prabhupada would say, the moon expedition. What are they, you know, they say they go to the moon, what's the first thing they do? They put the flag in, colonize the place. it belongs to America. No, it belongs to Russia. No, it belongs to China. Because we want the resources over there so we can exploit over here. It's the same program. Unless the condition of heart changes, the disease of material existence will continue. Just like Prabhupada describes. Just as there's death and old age, there's also going to be disease. And how do you cure the diseases? End the material body. And by end the cycle of birth and death. You go back to Godhead. So, Dhanvantari message, ultimately the whole of Ayurveda, the whole of Veda, is to draw us to the personality of Godhead. The previous verse is speaking about the manus, and similarly the manus, Prabhupada describes, do these two things. They disseminate the transcendental glories of the personality of Godhead, but they also chastise with the same potency as the personality of Godhead, to chastise with the Sudarshan Chakra. They chastise living entities that are errant. It's done in the form of their laws, of the laws of Manu, but they're very strong because the laws of nature are strong. So as devotees, we understand these things. So my appeal this morning is go contemplate the message of the Bhagavatam very thoughtfully, because it's the remedy to the problem. The research dollars are not going to remedy the problem. The Bhagavatam is the remedy of the problem. We have in our hand, when we hold Srimad Bhagavatam, it shouldn't stay on your shelf, it should be in your hand. And you're reading it. And you should know that the remedy for the problems of this age are in your hand. Read it very carefully. And distribute this knowledge thoughtfully and enthusiastically to others. Distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, helping people to understand the message of Prabhupada's books, helping them to live their life by the message in Prabhupada's books, being examples yourselves of the message in Prabhupada's books. This is our Krishna consciousness movement, printing and distributing Prabhupada's books. We mentioned this in Prabhupada's disappearance day. This is our life as devotees, to assist Srila Prabhupada in this mission of rescuing conditioned souls from this disease of material existence. Here's the medicine. Here's the medicine. Learn how to properly administer the medicine, take it yourself, and share it with other people. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Maharaj, as Krishna consciousness is growing all over the world, the transcription program in other parts, there also keep going that way, that is improving that way. So, how it is possible that we can make all of them Krishna consciousness in one point?
Fortunately, we don't have to make all of them Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said, I mentioned this the other day, there's a list of lectures and conversations, about 30 of them, where Prabhupada said, if just 5% of the population becomes Krishna conscious, the whole world can change. Because the presence of a devotee is very powerful. A devotee is a representative of Krishna. That's very powerful. The influence of one devotee is very powerful. Now we have to become devotees, like, you know, a real devotee. But when we're real devotees, it's very powerful. And another consideration is another way of addressing your question is this. At least those who take shelter of the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the message of Bhagavatam, the Sankirtan Yajna, and teachings of pure devotional service, there can be some relief. It's not to say that as Kali Yuga is going on during the time of Lord Chaitanya's movement, that the progress of Kali stopped, but rather those that took shelter of Lord Chaitanya transcended. That degradation all around them. And they set another example, and that other example is, at least for thoughtful people, is zillions of times more attractive than the degradation that's all around us. It's the shelter. It's the inspiration for many, according to the purity of that example. So that's our mandate. We can offer everyone the opportunity to become Krishna conscious, but our expectation is not that everyone is going to become Krishna conscious. Our expectation is that we follow the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and at least everyone should be given some opportunity, some means of elevation and purification. It's like prasadam distribution. It's an antidote to the material disease. It's not necessarily they're going to become a devotee because they took some prasadam. But there's definitely spiritual benefit, or hear the holy name, or see a public festival or something. Something else? Over on the ladies' side, there's a question.
Maharaj, just like how technology can be used in the service of Krishna, can the advancement in the medical research be used, or is it just leading us nowhere?
Well, it very much depends upon the field of medical research. Knowledge of medicine is already there, perfectly. So who needs the research? At least two things in the field of medical research. Things can be discovered that bring further confirmation to faith in the Vedas. That's really one nice contribution people can make. Another is to use the position as a medical researcher as a way of, by the respect that people hold in such a person who has such a position, to help that faith that they hold in the person bring people to Krishna consciousness. Not in the research itself, especially. How to use a position that's in the world of respect to draw people to hear the message of Krishna. If the spirit of pure devotion is there, anything can be used in Krishna's service. That's a message that Prabhupada has taught. The problem is, that's missing. And therefore, whatever research will be done will be used in a diabolical way. There are verses in this second canto where Prabhupada, and in the first canto too, where Prabhupada speaks about how a thing can be therapeutically used. And all fields in Krishna consciousness have their suitability. The greater challenge is the fundamental Krishna consciousness behind any profession, to use that profession in service to Krishna. That's the greater challenge. And it's very difficult in the where the economy is driven by demons to be the researcher of integrity. Somebody was just describing this to me. And it happened just in America before coming. Somebody that works in a research lab, a medical research lab, was having an argument with one of her professors. She works in a lab and she's studying for furthering her degree. American girl. And the professor was saying, what is all this? She was arguing against certain procedures that she was being asked to do in the lab. And he was asking, what's the problem? All it is tissue. I said, wait a minute. No, I disagree. It's not just tissue. But it's the fundamental assumption is, and because of that fundamental assumption, they can do all kinds of and take money in stem cell research. I was just told that one place, that in some countries they don't allow it, it's so demoniac. But in places they allow it, Singapore is one place where they allow it. Billions of dollars are going into Singapore from governments. U.S. government is putting billions of dollars, and governments all over the world, billions of dollars, billions. Many billions of dollars in independent pharmaceutical companies. And just plain crazy people, because it means that they want to find out the secrets of life. You move this and you make a monster. Their idea is you can replace limbs, and if a child is in the gestation phase is known to have, they're going to have some part of their body missing. All that mode of goodness talk. You move this genome and you get, a normal baby instead. I mean, that's what they're talking. These people are, that's not their interest. Unfortunately. It's nice talk. It's primarily about money. And right behind money is control. Really nasty. It's so hypocritical. George Bush is so adamant about, publicly saying he's against stem cell research. And billions of U.S. dollars are going into stem cell research. In one place. And taxpayers are paying for it. I mean, they're being implicated in that act. And so the karma is going to all those people for all this diabolical stuff. It's really nasty. So nasty. That reaction has to go somewhere for all that nastiness. It's really dangerous. The world of the intellectuals is where everything gets cooked up, and the rest of the pot. Sadaputta gave a whole seminar on this topic. He and Rabindra. The intellectuals are moving the money people. I mean, it looks like the money people are moving the intellectuals, but the intellectuals are deciding which way things go. And then money follows them. And then governments follow them, and everybody else is just reading about it in the newspaper. Prabhupada wanted so much that the thoughtful persons, intellectual potential persons, would have a deep understanding of this message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It was urgent for him to give this understanding. He spent, along with all of what he was doing with translating and traveling and preaching to the devotees, he was meeting with leaders and scientists and professors and government leaders to help them understand the urgency of this message.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, we are hearing so many points while reading and also hearing Bhagavatam classes and many other classes. But what is the reason for terribly failing in applying the points?
What is the reason for which?
For terribly failing in applying the points. Is the reason only because of not regularly contemplating on the points, or is it something more to do for applying the points in addition to the regular contemplation?
Okay, this is the root cause is our inimical attitude towards Krishna. It's very nasty. Our reason for coming to the material world is our reason for not applying that which we understand, how to relieve ourselves from being in the material world. We have a very deep, bad attitude toward Krishna. Or as Rabindra Swarup says, we have our issues with Krishna. We don't want to surrender. We want to be Purusha. That's why we're here. And we want to let go of being the Purusha. We're not the Purusha. We're an illusion. And we're suffering because of that illusion. But we don't want to let go. That's the problem. Deep-seated. Very deep. So regulation is mode of goodness. That's good. It's not enough. There has to be a change of, total change of heart. And this message of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the, combined with the chanting of the holy name is, it has that potency. All of the potencies of the personality of Godhead are invested in these primary activities. So we're listening with our mind, but our hearts are saying no. Very deep. We need a transformation of heart. So we have to hear in a regulated way, like you described, but we have to kind of amp up our eagerness to get on the other side of material existence, to reach Krishna, to receive the fullness of that, the message that we're being very kindly given. And I'm trying to pass on that eagerness this morning. And a big part of that eagerness is to recognize the reality of the problem, and that Prabhupada is equipping us through this transcendental message to understand the problem and the cure of the problem, and to be deputized to go and deal with it. It's not somebody else. It's the people that are assembled in our, you know, in our temples and around the world, and that are hearing this message with great seriousness. The opposition is formidable. Maya is very strong. And we're allured by the call of Maya. We want to enjoy, independent of Krishna, especially. Very strong. That's the problem. We say yes, yes, and the heart says no, no. So it's a gradual process. The desire to become pure instruments, to actually imbibe the message fully and be pure instruments of this message, must be strong, pure. Tivra bhakti is required. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.